And welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are previewing the Maui Invitational. Our recap of the football game against Iowa State will be coming to us a little bit later in the week. Since Maui starts today, being Monday, we thought we would go ahead and get that whole preview of the entire tournament done today. We are not going to podcast in between rounds, mainly because I think we have a fairly good idea of how this tournament's probably going to play out. That and it's not really a realistic turnaround there to try to podcast multiple times before each game. So, of course, to help me with our basketball previews, as always, we have Steve Fetch, the basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Fetch, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So obviously, Kansas they haven't played a game since we last talked. So, they definitely had a good last couple games like we had already talked about. But going into this game, the first game being against Chaminade, I can't imagine that there's anything worth really talking about for Chaminade, correct?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's a reason we're doing this, you know, right up so close to the start of the tournament here. And that is because, you know, it'd be pretty shocking if they lost to Chaminade. Obviously, they're a Division II school. I guess I will just to jump on my soapbox here a little bit because I don't know when I'll get the chance to do it. Maui has gone to where Chaminade's only playing in every other tournament, which I think, you know, they're the host of the tournament. I think, you know, let them play in every tournament. I get that. I think some coaches probably don't want to have a D2 opponent on their schedule and stuff like that. And I guess I get it. But, you know, for schools like Kansas, playing a Division II opponent is actually better than playing like a, you know, a sub 250 ranked Division I opponent, because playing a D2 opponent doesn't count against your net and everything like that. Whereas, you know, it will negatively impact your strength of schedule and all that stuff playing a lower ranked Division I team. So let Chaminade play every year is kind of my rallying cry of the first round.
You know, I would not have thought you would have had that take. And I mean, I do appreciate it in terms of tradition. You know, there is a reason that this team or this tournament is played every single year, and why Chaminade is the home team in every single one of their games. You know, I would hate to lose that just because people get upset about having to play Chaminade. Yeah, it kind of sucks for the team that has to play them in the first round, just because it's not kind of that super exciting, high profile game that you're kind of hoping for when you go to these types of tournaments. But since everyone is guaranteed three games and it is a nice, easy way to start it, like, I don't necessarily mind the fact that, you know, Kansas is playing Chaminade instead of Michigan State playing Chaminade or something like that. And for Chaminade, it's a really nice way for them to play a lot of these teams that they would never get a chance to play. I mean, how often does a D2 school get to say that I played against Kansas in a game that actually mattered as part of the regular season? Like, it doesn't work, you know, it doesn't count at all for Kansas's net, like you're talking about. But it is actually a regular season game. So they actually get to play with something on the line. And if they were to win that game, it would be a huge boost for them. So, yeah, I mean, it's not likely to happen, obviously, because they are a D2 school. But, you know, I like the tradition of it. I didn't fully appreciate it the first time, you know, that I ever saw Kansas go and they had to play Chaminade. But, you know, it definitely is an interesting tournament and a unique kind of background story. And I would hate to lose that just because some coaches or some fans get upset that they have to play a D2 school when they go to this tournament. All right. So with that kind of out of the way, because I don't think it's realistic at all to think that Kansas is going to lose that game to Chaminade. Let's take a look at who the first opponent is going to be for Kansas. And actually, we'll go ahead and talk about both of these teams in turn, because honestly, looking at this game, it's kind of a toss-up for me whether it's BYU or UCLA that's going to go ahead and move on. So let's go ahead and start with BYU. Have you had a chance to kind of look at their profile at all? You know, is there anything about this team that particularly concerns you?
Yeah. So of the other teams in Maui, you know, or of the teams in Kansas bracket, I should say, I've seen UCLA play. I haven't seen BYU play this year. So this is kind of a very Ken Pom heavy, you know, look ahead. Kind of the first thing that jumped out at me is they're one of the taller teams in the country. But then if you dig a little bit further, or I guess I shouldn't say one of the taller, they're above average in height. But you dig a little bit deeper and it's really, you know, they got a big backcourt, they got big wings. They don't really have a ton of size down low. So So that kind of leads you to believe that there's going to be a lot of, you know, dumping it into, you know, Gazebuki or whoever the five man is. Other thing that stood out to me is they do a really good job at limiting opponents' 3-point attempts, percentage as well, but you know, more pertinent is how few attempts they give up, which is going to be something that you never know. It could go one of two ways. I mean, Kansas hasn't been a really 3-point heavy team this year. So on the one hand, that doesn't, you know, really do anything to limit KU's offense, I don't think. But on the other hand, you know, I think you come to Maui and you come to play 3 games in 3 days. You're kind of trying to get that rhythm under you. You know, those Maui rims are notoriously soft. You kind of want to, you know, maybe jack up some threes and kind of feel what it's like to win a game where you shoot 40% of your shots from three or something like that. And they probably would not be doing that against BYU. But at the same time, BYU has been a pretty rough team inside defensively. So that leads me to believe there's going to be a lot of Udoka Azubuki down low, like I said. And I guess the other thing, too, is you never know if, you know, this early in the game, they've only played 5 games. So you never know if it's a kind of a, is BYU really that good at limiting attempts, or are they just playing teams that don't shoot a lot of threes, don't shoot them well? And that's where, you know, me not having watched them that yet this year kind of comes into play. But all told, I think they're probably a pretty good matchup for Kansas, even though they're a pretty good team and probably have, you know, maybe even the second best point guard in the tournament after Cassius Winston in TJ Haws, who has had a really nice career for BYU, one of the best passers in the country. Pretty good scorer as well. So he's going to be, you know, if Kansas does face off with BYU in the second round, he versus Devon Dawson is going to be a really good matchup.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. Like you were saying, that I mean, I actually have watched a little bit of BYU. Being LDS, I tend to try to watch them whenever I get the opportunity to. And, you know, I mean, it's hard to really – your KenPom scouting is fairly accurate for these guys. They are you know, they're not very big. They have that, you know, their tallest player is 6'9", and he honestly doesn't play that big. You know, they also, I mean, basically the reason they have that highest, or, you know, they're above average on height is because the shortest player on their team is 6'2", in terms of who actually plays consistently. And even then, like, everybody is basically in that 6'5", 6'6", range. Except for their tallest player that's 6'9", and then their shortest player that's 6'2". So they're you know, they have a really high average height because everybody's basically the same height. And so there's like not much variation. Part of that too allows them to be a little bit more interchangeable, I think, than most teams will be. And so I think that might be what will affect Kansas the most is that, you know, they don't have a lot of super consistent roles in terms of big man versus little man. And I mean, yes, their 6'9" center Colby Lee is definitely a center, or I guess kind of more of a power forward, but he definitely plays down low. You know, they do a lot of basically 4-guard set is the way that it comes across. They have got a lot of guys that can play out on the perimeter. So it'll be interesting. You know, Kansas probably will not be able to play 2 big men against them if they do, or at least consistently, unless, you know, Silvio or McCormick is able to get out and play consistently on the perimeter, which is something that they haven't been able to show that they're able to do. This is the perfect kind of test for that. It also makes me think that Kansas is probably going to go a little bit more 4-guard, a lot earlier than they normally do. And they'll definitely be playing 4-guard for a good portion of this game. So unfortunately, this is not the kind of game where you can kind of get right and work on a lot of things that you want to work on. It's more of a, you know, Can you play the way that you're going to have to against teams that are fairly talented that can put out really good 4-guard lineups and get out of there with a win? Kansas is definitely the more talented team, and any opportunity that they get to throw it into Udoka is going to be a good play for them. Probably going to result in points. The question is just going to be, you know, how well are they able to play on the defensive end to go on those types of runs to try to put this game away as early as possible. All right. Any other thoughts about BYU, or did you want to move on to UCLA?
Well, I guess just quickly, you know, I think that they, not to disagree with you, but I think they theoretically could play 2 big men. BYU, you know, shoots the ball a fair amount from three, but not like outrageously so. And as far as I know, or as far as I remember, I mean, they really, you know, there's only one big man who really shoots a ton of threes. So I think theoretically they could do it. You know, they did an okay job doing it against Duke, and, you know, Duke had a stretch four man. So I think they could, but Bill Self has really gone away from that stuff, like, immediately. I think Nick Schwert had a tweet after the most recent game against East Tennessee State where it was basically, like, the first 5 or 6 minutes of each half they played two bigs, and that was about it. So I'm not really expecting it. I think they could get away from it, but certainly not as much. And how's this for a segue? Certainly not as much as they will be able to if they have to play UCLA.
Yes, definitely true. So talking about UCLA, what is it you've seen from them? Is this another one of those – or no, you said you've actually seen them a few times. So what was it you've actually gotten from what you've watched with your own eyes?
Yeah, so probably I would think it's fair to say a more talented team than BYU. I don't think they're as good as BYU. I'd much rather face them than I would face BYU. They're big, and they have a lot of size down low. No one as big as Azubuike, but, of course, I don't think anyone has a guy as big as Azubuike, but they will play multiple big men a lot. Kind of a team that Kansas might have to go two bigs just to match up with their two bigs, which I think is okay because I think KU's big men are better than UCLA's big men. So they're kind of, you know, maybe forcing Kansas into lineups that I think would benefit them more so than UCLA. You know, it's kind of funny. They remind me a little bit of like the old K-State teams under Frank Martin, where they're maybe not the most efficient offense. They don't shoot a ton of threes, but they just, you know, relentlessly pound the offensive glass and kind of keep going until they score or get fouled, and they rely a lot on getting fouled as well. So some of it, I think, is a virtue of who they play. They haven't really played anybody good yet, but they do a really good job of, you know, just kind of outmatching teams athletically and physically and using that to get to the free throw line, using that to, you know, get second, third, fourth chance opportunities. And that's probably what they'll try to do to Kansas. And, you know, Kansas has struggled a little bit on the defensive glass. They did a pretty good job against Duke with two big men in the game. But as soon as you take that second big man out, they've really struggled on the offensive glass, partially because Udoka Azubuike is not a very good defensive rebounder. So that might be a weakness that UCLA can take advantage of. But on the whole, I mean, I think that that's the team you want to play. Their backcourt's not very good. They had a freshman point guard. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, so you're going to have to look it up for me. But, you know, he's not bad. He's got, you know, pretty good assist numbers. He's shot the ball pretty well. He's really small, though, which I think is something that, you know, you got two small point guards. I'm going to take KU's small point guard over anyone else's small point guard. So I think KU has the advantage there. But like I said, they're just going to be able to play two big men more than they probably have all season if they get to play them. And I think that's going to be something that's going to work out for them if Udoka Azubuike doesn't fall out within 3 minutes, I guess.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm kind of surprised you don't remember his name just because of what it is. It's Tiger Campbell.
There you go. I knew it was something wild. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those names. It's kind of hard to forget. I'm guessing there's so many of those. I mean, but they've got some other pretty good ones. Like Prince Ali is on this
yep.
team as well.
Yep.
I would definitely say that they've got several guys that could be on the all name team this year. But yeah. I mean, just kind of looking at what they've got, you know, because this is kind of the opposite for me. I haven't really watched any UCLA at all. But just looking at what they have here, it seems like they give up three-point attempts quite a bit, kind of the exact opposite of what BYU does. And, of course, I think a lot of that has to do with like you were saying, they play a lot of two bigs. They have a lot of good guys that are tall down low, which makes it a little bit more natural to be shooting the three-pointer against them. Kansas is one of the – few teams that they'll ever play that can essentially outdo them in what they want to do in terms of playing too big. So I'm curious how much UCLA has to try to adapt to that, how much Kansas leans into having the two bigs as kind of their ability or, you know, their big advantage there. Like you were saying, they are really good at preventing teams from getting offensive rebounds and getting their own offensive rebounds at all as well. And so that's definitely something Kansas have to work on. I actually expect to see a lot more Silvio in this game if they play UCLA, just because he is by far, I think, our best rebounder. To the point that you said about, you know, Kansas only playing two bigs for just a couple minutes. You know, it's actually, I think it was actually Nick Schwert who said the exact same thing, that it seems like the reason they do that is essentially so that they can tell guys that they are the starter, even though they don't get, you know, what you would typically think of as starter's minutes. So it might be Bill just kind of, you know, dealing with people's egos a little bit, kind of making sure that everybody is feeling that they have a particular role and giving them, you know, there's got to be a lot of managing egos when you've got three different big men who all theoretically could have an argument for starting, but you're only able to play one of them for any significant stretch of time at a time. So I think there's a little bit of that kind of juggling going on. I'm not necessarily too concerned about it, but I do think that this is the best matchup, mainly because it allows you really to see how that two big lineup could potentially work and try to build some of that two big guy chemistry there against a team where it makes sense to play that as much as possible. All right, yeah, we'll go ahead and leave that there. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I was going to say, I think you're right, and I think the other thing, too, with UCLA. By the way, we should mention that they also have Shareef O'Neal, a.k.a. Shaq's kid, on the team. He hasn't played a ton yet. He missed the entire year last year with a heart condition, but, you know, being Shaq's kid, obviously the sky's the limit for him, and you never know when his breakout's going to come. It's obviously going to come soon. Hopefully he delays it until after Maui. But one other thing I forgot to mention is UCLA, not a great shooting team. They don't shoot a ton of threes either. So probably something where it's going to be kind of a two-point battle. And when you have a guy who might be the most efficient two-point scorer in NCAA history, I mean, I'm going to take Kansas in that every time.
Yeah, definitely. And yes, you're right. Like, hopefully it's after the KU game where he goes off, or if he does go off, then it's, you know, maybe after they lose to BYU or something like that. Although I would like to see this Kansas versus UCLA, because like I said, I think it gives us an opportunity to see, you know, how well the two big lineup can work in a situation where you're not going to be at a huge disadvantage for playing two big guys. You know, like we've been talking about, the reason they go away from it so much is, I think, just because of the lineups that they're playing. It puts them at a significant disadvantage to try to shove two guys in there when one of them can't, you know, guard a guard essentially out on the perimeter. UCLA is not likely to do that. They're likely to have two big guys in there at a time. And so even if it's not clicking the way you expect it to defensively, it can work out where you have two big guys that are going battling with their two big guys. So even if the offense can't click immediately, at least the defense shouldn't be at a huge disadvantage. So, all right, we are going to go ahead and move to the other side of the bracket, talk about the other teams over there. But before we do that, I need to throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. All right, so before we talk about the team that I think everyone is just assuming is coming out of that bracket, Michigan State, that is, you know, there are three other teams on that side of the bracket. Georgia plays Dayton in the very first game. It's at 1:30 p.m. Kansas time. Then the second game, 30 minutes after that, would be Virginia Tech playing Michigan State. So of those other three teams, which one of them do you think is the most likely to come out of that bracket if it's not Michigan State?
Yeah, we kind of talked about this before we recorded, so I know we have different answers here, but I'm actually going to take Georgia. They got a potential top five pick in Anthony Edwards. I don't really know anything else about the team, to be honest with you, but Dayton's not very good. Virginia Tech lost their three best players off last year's team, and while I think they might be, you know, maybe the better team than Georgia eventually, I just think, you know, it being this early in the season, they, you know, that's pretty quick to replace three, I mean, frankly, really good players off a team that probably should have beat Duke in the Sweet 16 last year. So yeah, I mean, give me Georgia, give me Tom Crean, I guess. But yeah, it's obviously going to be Michigan State. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely obvious that that's, like, if you're putting any money down on it, that's definitely who you would go with. The one thing I will say, and the reason I think it is Virginia Tech, is that Virginia Tech is actually one of the better shooting teams and one of the better shooting defense teams. They are eighth in both offense and defensive effective field goal percentage. You know, they are very good at not turning the ball over. The main issue that they have offensively is that they cannot, or they don't do very well getting offensive rebounds, and they don't really go to the line very much, which isn't necessarily a big deal for them, especially since they are the, you know, they shoot the most three-pointers out of any team in the country. They shoot 53.1% of their shots are three-pointers, And they don't actually allow their opponent to shoot very many three-pointers as well. So it's a huge contrast of styles, which I think is what allows them. You know, they are 5-0. They have put up some really good efficiency numbers. And I think it's mainly because they're shooting a bunch of threes, which, you know, we've had this discussion multiple times before, that the three-pointer is infinitely more efficient than the two-pointer, unless you've got a guy like Doak on the inside that's, you know, making 75% of his shots. So the fact that they're shooting a bunch of them and their opponents are not shooting very many at all comparatively, I think really helps them out. You know, Georgia, on the other hand, is completely the opposite. They play inside a whole lot. They're not going to have a huge advantage there. To be honest, I could see them losing a game like that to Dayton, and I don't think Dayton's very good. But Dayton at least has the opportunity to potentially get hot from the three. And if Georgia plays Michigan State, I just don't see how they match up at all. Virginia Tech at least has an opportunity to kind of surprise Michigan State in that first round. I had heard from somewhere that, you know, and this is probably just coaches speak, but Izzo was mentioning, you know, just how tough this Virginia Tech team looks to be so far. I work with a couple of Virginia Tech fans. They seem to be really high on this team, saying that it's one of the better teams that they've had in a while. Obviously, it's a big deal trying to replace as many guys as they're trying to replace, but it's not like the guys that were behind them were absolute scrubs last year. They just didn't really have an opportunity with how good those top three scores were for them. So, again, if I had to put a percentage on it, I say it's probably 90% Michigan State comes out, you know, 7% that is Virginia Tech, 3% that it's Georgia, and then there's not a snowball chance in hell that it's going to be Dayton. All right. So, I mean, I don't think we really need to break down the other teams very much. So let's take a look at Michigan State. Obviously, Michigan State had a rough opening game to start the season against Kentucky. We all kind of watched that after the Kansas game in the Champions Classic. But overall, they're still ranked number one in KenPom. They have the number one ranked offense in terms of adjusted efficiency. And they have a top five defense as well. So they're definitely a very, very strong team all around. The question is, what is it about them that concerns you the most?
Well, you know, I think it's kind of a little bit of everything. Obviously, they're really good. They've got a lot of talent. And that's even without Josh Langford, who is out for, I think, like the first semester with an injury or something like that. I don't know exactly when he's going to be back.
They said that he'll be back.
You know,
no
big thing. They're just
January.
Talented up and down the roster. Cassius Winston, senior point guard, you know, preseason player of the year by pretty much everybody. He actually doesn't really worry me as much as maybe some other guys, just because of the fact that Devon Dotson played so well against him last year in the first game of his career in the Champions Classic. Also, Dotson, I think, is just, you know, a lot more athletic than Winston is. So. Not that Kansas has an advantage or anything at point guard, but I think he does cancel out a lot of the inherent advantages that Winston brings Michigan State. But just a lot of really good, talented big men or wing players who are big, I guess, for Michigan State. You know, Xavier Tillman has been really good. Aaron Henry has been really good. One thing that I do appreciate with Tom Izzo is he tends to not play his lottery picks as much as he should. So, you know, Aaron Henry's a guy who, although I think, you know, he did pick up an injury. I guess I don't remember off the top of my head how serious it is or if he's going to be playing in Maui. I think he is. But, you know, he's a guy who should be playing a lot more than he is. Kind of like how Jaren Jackson didn't play enough for Michigan State a couple years ago. So that's something that might help Kansas. But, yeah, it's just, you know, a lot of size, a lot of physicality. Probably going to be difficult to get a lot of second chance opportunities. Probably going to be tough to score inside against them. You know, Michigan State will give up some 3-point attempts. So Kansas is going to have to take advantage of that, take advantage of those open threes and score. Flip side, you know, Michigan State doesn't take a lot of threes. They don't make a lot of threes either. So it's one of those things where if it's a 2-point battle, you probably do favor the team that has Udoka as a bookie, but yeah, with just a lot of those big rangy guys, they can stop Marcus Garrett from getting a free drive to the basket, even with probably their third best perimeter defender. Tristan Anaruna isn't going to have like an inherent mismatch every time he touches the ball, stuff like that. So, I mean, Kansas is going to have to shoot the ball well, and they're going to have to shoot a lot of threes to beat him. And, you know, Udoka Azubuike is going to have to stay out of foul trouble as well. And then lastly, obviously, you know, you can't talk Michigan State without talking rebounding. Once again, one of the better rebounding teams in the country thus far. A little bit better on the offensive glass than the defensive glass, as they tend to be. But offensive glass, like I always say, is kind of more of a reflection of effort versus a reflection of, you know, size or talent or athleticism. So they're going to have to match that effort, and that's something that, you know, I don't know yet if they're the type of team that will be. I guess we haven't heard Bill Self call them soft yet, but you can rest assured that if they do lose in that championship game to Michigan State, you're going to hear Bill Self calling them soft pretty much immediately after.
Oh, of course. I mean, that's an annual tradition at this point. Whenever they lose their first big-time game, that's not in that first game. You know, he ends up calling them soft because that's the reason that they lost. So,
I don't think that after the Duke game.
No. Actually, I went back and looked because I was curious about that. Because, you know, I was wondering. I was like, when does he usually call them soft? And it's usually after the first loss, as long as that first loss is not in the first or second game of the season. So, like,
yeah, and,
you know, I mean, yeah.
It's kind of surprising to me that he didn't, because, you know, one of the things he always talks about in terms of, you know, being tough or being soft is, like, you know, a lot of these, like, stupid turnovers that they had against Duke. I mean, that's something that he pegs as, you know, soft or not, you know, mentally tough or whatever more than anything. So I'm really kind of surprised it didn't come out of his mouth after that one.
Well, so I think what I've noticed is his use of the term soft is used as like a motivational, but also it's essentially when he thinks that they're underperforming based off of where he thinks that they are at that point. I think it takes him, you know, no matter how good he thinks they're going to be or how bad, you know, like where he thinks they're going to be going into the preseason, like until you actually see them in a regular season game, it's hard to really set that baseline. And so I think the only reason he doesn't use it in the first teams is because they haven't really set a baseline for him to evaluate them against. I think it'd be completely different if, you know, if like it was just so far off base, but, you know, playing a good opponent, not really knowing where they are yet at that point, I'm not necessarily that surprised. Now, granted, now that I say that, you know, if they lose in the first game of next year's Champions Classic, he'll go ahead and do that just to show me how much of an idiot I am. But I honestly just kind of, I was wondering about that as well, because, you know, I used to have a little friendly competition with some people that I worked with that knew I was huge KU fans about the first time that he was going to call his team soft. And one of them had said, you know, I bet he'll do it this first game of the season, even if they, you know, even if they win. And you know, I actually went back and looked at it because of that. And it was really, really weird. I swear, I look up the most ridiculous things, I think, sometimes. But anyway, so for this team, like you were saying, Michigan State does not shoot threes, very many threes themselves. They're about average in terms of the proportion of their field goal attempts that are three-pointers, but they also are really, really bad at making them. They're sub 30% as a team, which means I think that they kind of shy away from them, especially in big moments. But they are very good at denying teams, and Kansas is kind of in the same boat. They, you know, they don't shoot nearly as often. They shoot less than 35% of their shots are three-pointers. Again, I think part of that is, like we've talked about, you know, having Udoka down low, you know, and what we talked about in that last game against Eastern Tennessee State, you know, they were just dumping everything inside because they were basically getting whatever they wanted in there. You know, so I think this might be a little bit skewed by that game, but Kansas also is probably not going to be a team that's shooting the three all the time. Especially if they're trying to play too big, trying to really get that down there. So I do agree that is, you know, we're going to see a very, very low post type of game. I think both teams are able to kick it out and are able to take three-pointers at a decent clip. But, you know, Kansas actually has an advantage when it comes to shooting because their field goal percentage is actually in the right around the 20th, whereas Michigan State's is at 66, according to KenPom. What that tells me is that, one, Kansas is dealing with the whole turnovers and the steals and everything from that Duke game. It's really skewing their results a little bit. As the season goes on, I expect that to get better, just because I don't expect them to turn the ball over that many times in most of their games. So I don't really know how to expect this one to go when we get there, but I do know that this is probably going to be one of those games where we're going to see a lot of action from inside the 3-point arc.
Yeah, and I think, it's one thing I kind of said it a few times when the preseason polls came out that I am totally in favor of like Michigan State being ranked ahead of Kansas. I definitely think they're, against an average opponent, a better team than Kansas is right now. But I think Kansas matched up really well with them, even with Josh Langford in the lineup, because they do have a, a point guard, maybe not advantage, but certainly not a disadvantage, which is something that Michigan State is able to, take advantage of so often. They got that wing stopper in Marcus Garrett, who can guard basically anybody in the country. And then down low, they've got Udoka Azubuike, who can neutralize a lot of advantages down low. So you can neutralize those kind of big stars for Michigan State. And then I like a lot of KU's depth guys, frankly, a lot more than I thought it would. I mean, Tristan Anarumo has been a lot better than I thought he would be. Marcus Garrett, obviously a superstar defensively, but offensively more of a role player. He's been, better than I thought he would be. I mean, when you kind of cancel out the top three and you leave it to those secondary characters, I mean, I like Kansas against Michigan State. So I kind of like them to win the whole thing here in Maui. Although, when they're down by 15 in the first half against Michigan State, I'll be throwing stuff per usual. But right now, I'm feeling pretty confident, even fully recognize how good of a team Michigan State is.
I mean, this is one of those I could see it kind of going anyway. So we'll just have to see how that ends up. So I'm a little less certain on the on this. I do think it's kind of a toss up once you get there against Michigan State. But I've had enough negativity with my picks so far. So I'm gonna go ahead and join you that as of unless something crazy happens like an injury or some weird upset that happens where we're just not seeing it. I'm expecting it to be Kansas and Michigan State in the final, and I'm expecting Kansas to go ahead and pull it out. So, all right,
Yeah,
before we get out of here tonight, any oh, go ahead.
no,
Go
I'm
ahead.
just gonna say, I'm not super confident. I mean, I think that they're probably like, 55% to win against Michigan State. Maybe like 54, 53% with Josh Langford in the lineup. Obviously, he's not gonna be playing, so that kicks it up to like a 54, 55%. So kind of like a weighted coin flip more than being super confident.
All right. Well, that sounds a little bit better, a little bit more what I was expecting. So, all right. Any other, did you have a random sports minute for us today?
Well, we talked about it last week. We're recording this prior to the Grey Cup, but people aren't going to hear this until after the Grey Cup. So either Winnipeg or Hamilton is going to win the Grey Cup Sunday night. That's really the only random thing on my brain. So it's not very good because it's already going to happen before people hear it.
And
But
we don't
that's
know what
just
the
kind of,
actual result is.
yeah, exactly. It's kind of the worst time to have one of these things for me. But it's
Yeah,
really the
no,
only
that's
thing
all
I
right.
can
Instead, I will
have
go
on
ahead
my
and
brain
take the
right
minute
now.
then today, talking about, kind of an update I was going to do anyway, but we'll count this as our random sports minute. The women's soccer team just finished their run in the NCAA tournament. They won the first game on Friday against Xavier 3-0. Katie McClure had a hat trick to lead the Jayhawks there. They then faced South Carolina, who was hosting actually earlier today. I just got done watching it just a little bit before we started recording. And the Jayhawks fell 2-0 was the count that I saw. I will admit I didn't actually watch the very last few minutes just because they got that second South Carolina got that second goal. Yeah, okay. The final was 2-0. They got a second goal there as Kansas was really pushing. It was, South Carolina didn't score until there was about 20 minutes left in the game. So it was a really tough match throughout. And unfortunately, Kansas just wasn't able to hold on at the end of the game. So, but it was a great season for them. The furthest that they've ever been in the NCAA tournament. It was the highest ranking I believe that they've ever had. The first time that they've actually hosted in the NCAA tournament. So it was absolutely fantastic for them. They are losing quite a bit this year going into next year with a bunch of seniors that are graduating, but hopefully Coach Mark Francis can take this opportunity to kind of build this program and continue to take it to places that they've never had it before. So, all right, we will go ahead and leave it there. Fetch, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you haven't already, please do go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe to us there, get every episode when it comes out, as soon as it comes out. If you can give us a rating and a review, I would absolutely love it. 5 stars, nice comments would be great, but if for some reason you're not able to do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring this podcast to you guys for your entertainment, to get you guys the information that you need. If you have any comments, questions, suggestions, want us to try to interview any specific people, anything like that, you can email me, rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact me on Twitter, @rockchalkpod. Of course, Fetch runs the Rock Chalk Talk site, @rockchalktalk, over there on Twitter, so you can interact with any of us there at that point. But we'll go ahead and leave it there. Once again, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.